You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 4th of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, we've got a couple of good news stories to get into today. It's always nice to hear some positive news. An ex-Durham University donor who gave more than £7 million to his alma mater has cut off his funding and is instead giving his donations to the fight for free speech on campuses. And this is really good news, but you would imagine that there would actually be more people that were doing this. You would imagine that there would be more people that were involved in businesses that were concerned about the way that the country is going and wanted to support free speech and to support right-wing organisations. I guess you have the Brexit party, or you have Reform. You have the guy that owns Wetherspoons. I think he's supposed to be properly conservative or right-wing, supports Brexit. But you would imagine that there would be more people doing things like this and cutting off funding from these universities. Of course, there was a philanthropist a couple of years back who wanted to give out some money for the white working class. The group in society that are the most let down and receive the least funding and help from the government. And he tried to give money to a university to help out the white working class. And he was told that he couldn't do this. And the university didn't want to accept his money because they thought that they would be accused of being racist. And of course, this came after Stormzy gave out a couple of million pounds, I think, to a university so that they could create a scholarship specifically for black students. Yet if you want to do that for white students, you can't do this. So I'm pleased that this is going on. And he's actually saying who his name is. He's trying to draw attention to this fact that we've got this problem with free speech in universities. Mark Hillary, his name is, formerly Durham University's largest donor, has said he will not donate to any university again until they get their free speech house properly in order. Now, will this actually have any effect, though? I mean, this is the question. When we look at these corporations that end up putting in all this woke advertising, like Gillette, various other companies that promote race mixing and promote transgenderism and promote men behaving like women and all that sort of thing, they always end up losing money, but they never backtrack on what they're doing. They always continue to do it. They usually just double down and promote it all the more. So will we actually see the universities responding to this? You remember, this is the Durham University's largest donor, who has pulled all his funding from the university. In 2022, he gifted £400,000 to the Free Speech Union, a campaign group whose work includes protecting academics. Now, that is not as much money as he was giving to the university. If you think he gave £7 million to the university, but he's given £400,000 to the Free Speech Union, and I'm sure they will be able to do a lot with that. And you just wonder, why doesn't anybody give a large sum of money to Patriotic Alternative? I mean, they're the only organization in Britain that are campaigning against illegal immigration, against legal migration, the only group that are campaigning to keep the indigenous British people a supermajority within the United Kingdom. You would imagine that there were big directors of companies, owners of companies that also wanted to see The indigenous British people remain a supermajority and would want to give their money to Patriotic Alternative. I mean, surely they could do that anonymously. I mean, it really does surprise me that we don't actually have anybody that funds our organisations. Of course, there are lots of people that fund the left-wing organisations, and I think the general public don't think about this. You know, they read about the right wing in the press, they read about Patriotic Alternative, and I think they probably imagine that PA have funding from philanthropists and businessmen. We don't actually have any funding at all at PA. Everything is done on a shoestring. And if there was to be a donation, I mean, you imagine the great thing, wonderful things that could be done with it, because we're so used to doing everything on a shoestring. And I should imagine that this £400,000 that's gone to the Free Speech Union, I should imagine that goes very far, because they've got a lot of people there that are very, very dedicated to what they are doing. Free speech advocate Andrew Doyle said that funds received by the organisation are going to do a lot more good. And they will do. They'll do a lot more good at a small organisation like that than they would do at this university that of course gets all its funding from the government anyway. The Free Speech Union doesn't get any funding from the government, and certainly Patriotic Alternative don't get any funding from the government. I think this was one of the good things about when we were actually a part of the EU, because if you could get yourself voted into the European Union Parliament, then you stood to get a lot of money from that. So the BNP did do rather well out of getting voted into the EU Parliament, and also some of these other right-wing groups in Europe. And that was a way that you could get funds for a nationalist organisation. But there's no other way that we can get funding. I mean, I was talking about yesterday, I was talking about this Prevent organisation that is supposed to prevent people or youngsters from becoming extremists, and Prevent works in partnership with a lot of Muslim organisations. But a lot of their referrals are to young white lads that are supposedly at risk of becoming radicalised, and yet Prevent doesn't actually work with any right-wing organisations. It doesn't work with any nationalist organisations. It doesn't sort of say, well, this nationalist organisation here, they're trying to do everything legally. They will steer you clear of any extremism, and this is an organisation that we work in partnership with. There are no white organisations, nationalist organisations or right-wing organisations that Prevent work in partnership with. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, well isn't that discrimination? Surely some of these right-wing white organisations should apply to Prevent to work with them and be a partner. And if they are refused, wouldn't they be able to then take Prevent to court for discrimination and say, well, look, you haven't got any right-wing organisations. Clearly, there is some discrimination going on here when you have a lot of youngsters that you are taking into Prevent and you're trying to steer them away from extremism. You have Muslim organisations to help you with the young Muslim lads, but you have no right-wing organisations to help you with the young white lads. Does that not imply that there is some discrimination going on here against white people? I mean, it's a question to think about, I think. Talking to founder and director of Free Speech Union, Toby Young, on GB News, said his decision comes after a rise in what he considers campus wokery, which has seen speakers banned and academics bullied for voicing their opinions. And that money is now going to the Free Speech Union. And this is it. It's not just students that are frightened to speak up. Actual academics have been unable to speak at universities because the universities have been too frightened to host them. When they have hosted them, there's been a mob of left-wing Antifa threatening the academic and trying to shut down the speech. So the universities are just too frightened to actually put them on. And this is the reason why the government have said that it's necessary to have a free speech bill, which will guarantee free speech at universities and make it so that if academics can't speak at a university, that they can then take that university to court. And I did a Daily Nationalist podcast on this a few months back because I thought this free speech bill did look very good. But it now seems as if the universities have kicked up a big fuss about this, and they're trying to get this bill watered down so that it becomes very, very difficult for an academic to sue the university. First, they have to exhaust all possibilities with the student union. Then they have to exhaust all possibilities with the university. And then they can appeal and go to the courts, which, of course, could end up taking years. And it could prevent people from doing anything about this. They may just not want the bother of having to wait a couple of years before they can do anything about the fact that their free speech was impinged upon by a university. So I'm hoping that that will get changed. And this organization here, Toby Young's Free Speech Union, they are the organization or sort of organization that will put pressure on the government to do this. And of course, in order to do that, they need funding. So, I mean, this is great that this Mark Hillary is giving them effectively £500,000 to the Free Speech Union and withholding another £7 million from Durham University. Toby Young said, "This is fantastic that one of these alumni that often gives a lot of money to the universities, it's now going to the Free Speech Union, where it's going to do a whole lot more good." I mean, just the fact that it's a small organisation that it's going to, I mean, it means that the funds are going to go further than when it goes to a university with lots of people that attend the university. I mean, that's before you even look at the cause and say, well, this is a much more righteous cause, free speech, than giving the money to a university whose goals have now been changed and who are trying to decolonize the curriculum and remove all the people that look like Mark Hillary from the curriculum. I mean, this is what I mean. You would imagine that there would be far more people that are concerned about this than are. I mean, they are effectively removing all the people that look like the directors of companies, that look like these great philanthropists who are all white. They're just removing them from the curriculum. That's what decolonizing the curriculum means. You would imagine that more people would be concerned about this. Perhaps this will start off a trend in university donors giving money to the Free Speech Union and withholding it from the universities, because there must be more people that are concerned about it than just this one fellow. Hillary, who read engineering at Durham in the late 80s, first paused his donations to the university in early 2022 over its prolonged use of online teaching, following a string of rows at universities over the dismissal of academics and students over their views. The 57-year-old cut off further funding. So I wonder if he was concerned about what went on with COVID and over worry, I guess you could call it, over COVID, that turned out to not be as dangerous as we thought it was, and preventing people from coming to university, preventing people from going to work. I mean, it's had a long negative effect on people. So I guess he was just looking at that and saying, well, they're not actually teaching at the university anymore, so I'm going to pause the donations because of that. But then when he saw what was going on with academics and students not being able to speak their voice at the university, he's cut off the further funding. He told the Telegraph, "It is both depressing and deeply ironic that someone who was a long-time significant supporter of higher education now feels compelled to redirect his financial efforts to protecting free speech within it." I mean, this is something the government should be doing. The government should be there to protect our rights, to protect our constitutional rights to free speech. It should be the government that are doing this. I mean, it shouldn't have to fall to these private donors to start withholding money to draw attention to it. And I'm surprised that he only realized this was going on in 2022. I mean, we've been talking about this for the last 7 or 8 years, probably longer than that, at Radio Albion. And of course, it's been in the mainstream press for the last 2 or 3 years, at least. He says, "In the real world, such actions would surely send some alarm bells ringing and prompt some hard-headed, honest questions. But in higher academia, the message currently appears to either get lost or be deemed irrelevant to the cause." And this is the thing. This is what I'm saying about these organizations that promote these woke ideas. They end up losing a lot of money, but they continue to promote them. And I guess what this organization will say, that the university, they'll say, well, we still get our funding from the government. We have to promote diversity. We're just trying to promote equity. We're just trying to make everybody equal. So this is a good cause that we are supporting. And of course, just on the surface, you know, that sounds very nice, doesn't it? But when you look at the actual effects of it, and you realize that it means that people that excel will not find a place at the university, because the places at the university have been given to people based on what race they are or what sexuality they are. And you realize that it's just going to cause a lowering of standards. And refusing to hear the other side's point of view and just banning them outright just means that your point of view is going to get weaker and weaker and weaker. And when they meet people in the real world and they try to argue with them, they're just not going to be able to do it, because the real world's arguments are going to be so much more stronger. And because the student has never had a chance to actually hear the other side of view in this debate. So they're going to be absolutely useless at promoting their argument. And that's what it effectively says, isn't it? When you ban free speech, you ban the other side from airing their point of view. You're effectively saying that your point of view is so weak, it cannot stand to be critiqued. It cannot stand. You're not able to actually defend your positions. You're too weak to defend your positions. That's what it says when you ban free speech. Free speech controversies at Durham include an attempt by students to oust Professor Tim Luckhurst, who claimed the principal of South College had promoted a culture of harm and hate by inviting Rod Liddell, an associate editor of The Spectator, to give a speech. And we covered this last year when this happened. The guy that actually invited a journalist, I mean, that's all Rod Liddell is. He's not a nationalist activist. He's not extreme right wing or anything like that. He's just a journalist who's worked at various newspapers. He was invited to speak at a dinner, and all these students claimed that it was the equivalent of violence against them to invite this nominally conservative, I guess you could say, or genuinely conservative journalist to actually speak there. And I mean, the Conservatives and the Labour Party are the two main political parties that we have in the country. So if you're going to ban somebody just for supporting the Conservatives and having a conservative point of view, I mean, that says that we've got a serious problem with free speech in this country, doesn't it? And also this Durham University, that's the university that Professor Edward Dutton was educated at. That's the one that he studied at. It's a very good university, and to think that they're just giving in to this, to the mob, demanding that people not be allowed to be given a platform when these people have not said anything illegal. Remember, as I say, Rod Liddell is not a member of National Action or something like that. He's just a conservative journalist. And, yet they wanted him to be banned and kicked out of speaking at this dinner. And because, this professor had invited him, they wanted to get this professor sacked as well. We've seen quite a few people that have had professors and high up lecturers that have had to leave the university that they were teaching at because of their opinions. Toby Young, the founder of the Free Speech Union, said the organisation had been involved with 15 cases alone at the University of Durham since 2020. So it seems this university is getting a bit of a name for not having free speech there and not allowing there to be open debate. Toby Young told GB News, "I thought that we'd have more of a struggle coming to the defence of people placed under investigation for saying perfectly lawful things, but which someone has found offensive and which the university has decided to take seriously the complaints. I thought we would have more difficulty, but actually, surprisingly, if you push back robustly, if we get our chief legal counsel or one of our legal officers involved, in some cases, all we have to do is to threaten to go to law. So it seems if you do push back, you can get the universities to back down." And this is their argument. This is why they're saying that the government don't need to bring in this free speech bill. They're saying that they're doing enough about this, but they're not doing enough about it, are they? Not when you end up with feminist lecturers that have to leave university because there are too many violent threats against them for saying that there is a difference between male and female, and when you've got just normal conservative journalists that are being cancelled and not allowed to speak at the university, you've got a serious problem there. I think one of the conservative MPs, Sajid Javid, I mean, he was attacked when he went to a university and had to have a special security detail because something he said about there being differences between men and women. So it's very good news that this large donor, the largest donor at the University of Durham, is withdrawing his funding and instead giving it to the Free Speech Union. So that's our little bit of good news from Britain today. We've also got some good news from Hungary here, who often turns up in our good news sections. Viktor Orban really does seem to stand up for the Hungarian people. Of course, a lot of people, perhaps people in Hungary, might say, well, he's not right-wing enough. He's got a lot of cronies that he helps out, but and he's supportive of Israel, of course. But when you look at Hungary and you compare it to other countries in the European Union, I mean, he is just leagues ahead of every other country in actually standing up for the Hungarian people and doing what is best for them. Hungary has exempted young mothers from paying income tax as it continues to expand the package of pro-family formation policies it has introduced as an alternative to mass migration. And Orban has really highlighted this as well, that what's going on in the rest of Europe is because we've got these low fertility rate, we're not producing enough to replace ourselves. All the rest of the governments in Europe are encouraging migration from other parts of the world so that they can replace their own people with people from the other side of the world, as if the population of a country are just a number, and they can just be changed at will for another group of people. And Viktor Orban doesn't look at the Hungarians like that. He doesn't look at them as if they're just simply human beings and can be swapped and replaced with other human beings from elsewhere in the world. He looks at the Hungarian people as being Hungarian. And he understands that if you start replacing all the Hungarian people with others, Hungary is going to stop looking like Hungary, and it's no longer going to have its Hungarian culture. So he has been pointing this out and saying what we need to do is increase the number of Hungarians that are being born, not replace them with others. And you have to give all credit to Viktor Orban for pointing these things out on the world stage. I mean, he's been over there in America at some of the conservative conferences over there, speaking to them. He goes on Tucker Carlson. He certainly is probably the best European politician that we have, with most Western and particularly post-communist societies experiencing low birth rates. The consensus among governments of both the left and the supposed centre-right has been to try and replenish ageing communities and fill gaps in the labour market through ever-increasing mass legal immigration and a lax approach to controlling illegal immigration. Well, it's not hardly replenishing the ageing communities, is it? What it's doing is displacing the ageing communities and replacing the people that we actually have within our countries with a completely different ethnic group, with a completely different culture. Statistically, often is more liable to carry out crimes, statistically has a lower average IQ, statistically is less likely to work. I mean, you cannot just look at people groups and say, well, they're all interchangeable, we can just swap one people group for another and we'll end up with exactly the same results. There are differences between these people groups, statistically relevant differences between these people groups. I mean, there are some groups where none of the women work, for instance, and where a lot of the men don't work. And of course, then they're going to claim that there's some kind of a phobia, which is the reason for this. Whereas you wouldn't have any of these arguments if you didn't import these peoples from elsewhere. You wouldn't be accused of phobias. You wouldn't be accused of discrimination. I mean, racism wouldn't be able to exist if you just had one ethnicity living within a country. I mean, how could they be racist if there weren't any other ethnicities there to be racist against? I mean, this is the mentality of Hungary. They don't want to import people that might be likely to carry out terrorism. I mean, that's the reason that he gives for not allowing Islamic immigration. And funnily enough, they don't have any Islamic terrorism in Hungary. They don't have any Islamic terrorism in Poland either. And that's not to say that all Muslims are terrorists. Of course they're not. But some of them are. And why would you import a group that might contain terrorists if you don't have to? And this is Viktor Orban's mentality here. And what he's doing, instead of encouraging this migration of these different groups, is to make it easier for the people that have large families in Hungary. So with programs like this, where they don't have to pay income tax. A small number of countries led by national conservative governments are pursuing an alternative to migration, a more long-term approach of supporting and rewarding their own citizens, informing families in an effort to boost natural population growth, including Poland and most especially Viktor Orban's Hungary, and I think Slovakia are as well. They have a conference of these countries that are trying to increase the birth rate. So I think it's Poland, Slovakia, Hungary. I think they had representatives of Italy that were there last time as well. You know, it's not the whole of Europe that is engaging in this replacement migration policy. There are parts of Europe that are trying to increase the birth rate within their own countries. And it's interesting when you think about it, this problem that we've had with the birth rates, it's all come about since we had feminism. And we encouraged women to go to work, and we allowed women to vote as well. And of course, women think more emotionally than logically, and women tend to vote in different ways to the ways that men do. So that they are more inclined to vote for these liberal policies when they're working, that they're less inclined to have large families. And the end result of that has been that we're not producing enough to replace ourselves. And what we should be doing is what Viktor Orban is suggesting, encouraging our own people to be more fertile and to have large families. And instead of that, we're just encouraging these other peoples to come into our countries. We're just setting up problems for us further on down the line. Hungary is continuing to expand its family-friendly policies despite straitened global economic circumstances, heading in 2023 by exempting women who become mothers before turning 30 from paying income tax. And of course, mothers aren't going to pay that much income tax anyway, because they're not going to be likely to work. I mean, what they really should be doing is giving these young mothers an income. But I think they're doing that as well. And what they're saying here is, if you want to work, you want to do part-time work, you can get a job, you don't have to pay any tax either. I mean, they're really raising up the women that have children and trying to encourage large families. They're trying to encourage these families to stay together as well, with incentives to stay together, rather than what you have in some of these dysgenic countries where you have incentives for the mother to become a single parent and to live on their own without the father there, because they're going to get more in benefits and welfare. They try to do the opposite of that in Hungary. According to the government's calculations, tens of thousands of young mothers with an income could avail themselves of the possibility of tax exemption, explained Hungary's Secretary of State for Family Policy, Agnes Hornung, in a statement provided on Sunday. They are eligible not only for the new income tax exemption, but equally for all other forms of family support, including the family tax allowance, the baby expecting support loan, and the child care fee, she added. So they get all these benefits for having a child. I think all we have here in Britain is child allowance. I forget what the actual term for it is. And you stop getting it if you earn a certain amount of money, and you stop getting it if you have more children than four, I think it is. I mean, it may even be two. You know, there's no encouragement to have large families within Britain. And of course, in Hungary, this is specifically aimed at the Hungarians. It's not aimed at anybody who moves to the country or anybody who happens to be born in the country. It's aimed specifically at the Hungarians. The tax break, which will apply regardless of whether the mother is married, single, or divorced, and last from the 12th week of pregnancy until the end of the year the mother turns 30, is said to have a dual goal of promoting the births of children and leaving more money with families. And also, it's encouraging people to have children when they're in their 20s, when the child is most likely to be born healthy. I mean, the older you get, the weaker the sperm get, the weaker the eggs get, and the more likelihood there is that the child is going to be weak or lacking in some aspects. If you have the children under the age of 30, you've got the best chance of producing the most healthy child. So there's a certain element of eugenics there to this as well, encouraging these women to have their children before they reach 30. And also, I mean, you're effectively saying there that for the adult life all the way up till 30, the women doesn't have to pay any tax. Young Hungarians were already exempted from paying income tax until they reached the age of 25 a year ago in order to discourage emigration and to help young people to feel they could consider starting a family without having to take a severe hit to their pockets. So that's wonderful, isn't it? They really do care about their population, and particularly the young people. Say they don't have to pay any tax to the age of 25. And, you know, what their big worry is that a lot of these Hungarians will leave and move to other countries where they can earn more. So they're really trying to discourage this. Whereas you've got other countries, perhaps like Albania, that couldn't care less. They don't care if they've got Albanians that come to Britain, because they're going to send the money back to Albania anyway. Well, Prime Minister Viktor Orban has long lamented the fact that fewer and fewer children are being born throughout Europe, and the fact that, for the most part, the West is responding to this with immigration. So he's not just concerned about Hungarian. He understands that the Hungarians are part of a larger family. He's part of the European ethnicity, and he is just as concerned about this happening in other countries that he is in Hungary. Hungarians see this in a different light, he insisted in 2019, saying, "We do not need numbers, but Hungarian children. And immigration means surrender." It does, doesn't it? It means that these countries that are importing people to replace their own, that they've just given up in this competition that we're in. We're all in a competition. All these different people groups in the world are in a competition to outbreed each other for position, for influence, for resources, all of these things. And it just seems that North Europeans have just given up on this and said, "Oh, we'll just replace ourselves. It's better that we don't exist anymore." It's a serious psychological problem that we have as a people, that we've just saying, well, we're no longer going to replace ourselves, and we're no longer going to provide everything that we need for ourselves. We're just going to give it out to other people. Anybody who happens to be born on our territory, we'll just give them the rights to everything. And it's an insane mentality to have. Orban continues, "If we resign ourselves to the fact that we are unable to sustain ourselves even biologically, by doing so, we admit that we are not important even for ourselves." And it is, I mean, it's like looking at a teenager that is self-harming. Of course, it's a shock. It's horrible. You don't want to see teenagers self-harming. But what we're actually doing as a people group is exactly the same. We're self-harming. We're not producing enough to support ourselves, and we're handing over everything that we have to these other groups. And if we continue on the path that we're on, we're going to end up going extinct within 100 years. We're going to end up a minority within our own countries by 2060. And you've got to look at these things at the group level. You can't just look at individuals. He went significantly further, this is Orban in 2022, saying that while Western and particularly West European governments were welcome to try and solve their population or depopulation problems through the import of immigrants, he was dead set against attempting such a solution in Hungary and would resist the continued efforts of the European Union and its supporters to foist it upon his country through schemes such as compulsory migrant redistribution quotas. And all credit to Orban, he has resisted all of this, even though the European Union have withdrawn funding from him. And to get the legitimacy that he needs for these policies, he offers it up to the general population of Hungary. He offers up a referendum. Do they want to have immigration? No. Do they want to teach young children that they can be the opposite gender if they want? No. And that was the most recent referendum that he offered to the Hungarian people, whether they wanted homosexuality to be taught to children, transgender ideology, feminism, women's studies, all of these things. Do they want their children to be taught that at school, or would they rather the parents taught it to the children? And it was a resounding vote for, "We want the parents to teach the children." So he stopped all of this being taught in the schools. And of course, the European Union then says, "All this is a threat to human rights. There's a threat to democracy in Hungary." But you couldn't get more democratic than putting these things up to a popular vote, could you? And it's not a threat to democracy. It's actually democracy that is in action that you actually see in Hungary. And you see there that if you have a politician that really does do his best for his people, then he gets a massive amount of votes. He wins by a landslide. I mean, Orban is really well loved in his country. You can hardly say that Rishi Sunak is loved in Britain, could you? He continued saying, "There are countries in Western Europe, like the German Left Liberal Coalition government that has just taken office and has written the following into its programme. Germany is an immigrant country. I would rather cut off my right hand than write such a sentence into any government programme, he vowed. So he's saying Hungary is not an immigrant country. Hungary is a country that was built by Hungarians. Germany is a country that was built by Germans. But the Germans are suicidal now as well. They're maladaptive. They're claiming that their country is an immigrant country. Orbán indicated that he believes many Westerners stuck with pro-migration governments share his preference for a less diverse, more socially cohesive society. Later that year, telling an interviewer that he was happy to welcome foreigners who like the way that we think. So he understands that the majority of the indigenous Europeans support his policies and don't want to be replaced in their own countries. So the interviewer asked, so can we say refugees welcome, taking a jab at the Hungarian leader's long-standing opposition to letting migrants cross his country's southern border? Yes, exactly, Orbán replied, but from the West, Western refugees are welcome. So that's really good to hear. He does have this solidarity that the Hungarians are a part of an extended family, and he wants to welcome other Europeans that like the way that Hungary does things, other Europeans that maybe they're concerned about the Islamization of their country, maybe they're concerned about all this diversity that is being foisted upon them. And if they want to go to a country that is 99.9% white, but that maybe speaks a different language, but effectively is exactly the same extended family, then they are welcome to go to Hungary. So great news from Viktor Orbán here. It is wonderful that he is encouraging this increase in the birth rate amongst the Hungarians rather than just replacing them with migration. And it's great news that Durham University's largest donor has withheld his funding and instead given it to Toby Young's Free Speech Union. Great to have some good news to talk about here at last at the Daily Nationalist. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.